to the legislature. And then that should be followed in the way of an orderly, identified, you know, with priorities. This study should indicate the needs, should indicate a priority for the needs, and then the legislature should bond or make direct appropriations to alleviate those taking the priority list. And as to my knowledge, this has never been done. And I would assume that's the first step.
Do you know what the cost would be to have such a study?
I'd be very reluctant to give an off-the-cuff estimate for such a study.
What's the off-the-cuff?
I said, I'd be reluctant to give it, but I'll give you $50,000.
To make the study?
To make the study. And that's an extremely reluctant estimate. It just came off the cuff.
I'd like to add a little more in response to that one, and that is, I think that there also needs to be carried further than, you know, I think that that's the first step. In addition, I think there should be recommendations made by whoever does this planning as to different methods of, and not only different methods of construction, different types of buildings, because in the past the state has stuck pretty much to conventional construction, stick-built. There are a lot of new materials and new methods of constructing facilities that have not been used in the state. They've been used in other states, and they've been used in Canada. And I think that some of those need to be also explored. At least taking a look at. Keeping in mind that the objective is to provide the best building possible to meet the needs of the clients at the cheapest cost.
There was something brought up similar to this. They were trying to standardize the system itself. For one thing, it would be easier for a maintenance man to go from one school to the other. It's basically almost the same. They have the same type of equipment or whatever they work on before and different things like this, which cut down man hours quite a bit. If something happens someplace, you can send somebody out and the guy would already know the system itself. So when you go into a different type of constructions or buildings and so forth that hasn't been tried, this should be kept in mind too.
Some of those methods lend themselves to that by the way that you put your, it has to go to public bid, but it's the way that you put your bidding package together. Right now, you cannot, for example, specify, let's say we're dealing with a furnace, you cannot specify that you're going to use, let's say, X brand furnace. If you do, you're being, all the other manufacturers, of course, are going to get upset. So you do specify that any manufacturer who can build a furnace that meets these performance specifications can bid. And as a result, you end up with every school site has a different furnace. Therefore, you cannot stock a standard part for replacement. And you can, if you're dealing with a number of sites at the same time, and you can bid by componentizing your bidding, or systems as it's called, you can bid, put in your specification, 10 furnaces at these 10 locations, and this is a specification. All manufacturers still have the opportunity to bid, and whoever gets it, of course, is going to provide generally brand X rather than two of this and two of that. And this applies to hardware, windows, carpeting, interior walls. There's a whole...
I can see your point there and so forth, but then again, in the long run, as far as getting one standardized parts where you can order in quantity and you can save a lot of money in, by doing this, not only in part-wise, different things that are standardized, but also in man-hours. Because if you've got an individual that's working on one type of equipment, and he gets to know that equipment inside and out, when something does happen, he doesn't really have to troubleshoot, but through experience, he can tell you exactly what's wrong with it and where to go to find the problem and fix it. But under the way this contract you have stated reads, I don't see why that can't be changed. Because I think it, cost-wise, by having a standardized system, it will outweigh the other systems where you have furnaces that may not really meet specifications within the contracts, may not even be good furnaces and so forth, but through trial and error, I think eventually the system would improve. That's the only suggestion.
Are there any other questions? Did you have something, Mr. Ferguson?
No, I didn't.
No.
Mr. Thomas, what's your judgment about the cottage system as opposed to the dormitories, the regional dormitories? If the cottage system is more expensive, do you still think we need to go, we should go that route from an educational and psychological standpoint, development of our secondary education program?
Let me say that on the dormitories, as were operated, staffing patterns, the fixed costs, the results of their effectiveness, if you want to measure them in terms of number of students completing the school year, where we were spending a great deal of money with not very good results. The cottage program, this is the first year of operation. We're operating basically two. Kodiak is separate. They receive their funding separate. We have nothing to do with it. We are using, actually, Bethel Dormitory as a cottage. And the staff quarters at Nome. Both of those, which I have reviewed, look very good, both in terms of what the students are doing and cost. I don't know what Kodiak's costs are, but the costs at those locations, and also in terms of the fiscal costs and the success of the students, looks much better at this point. I think it's really too early to make an evaluation.
Can you compare, like, you did compare the costs a little bit, how are they versus the dorm?
We're basically, the dormitory costs varied from location, from about $3,600 at Kodiak to roughly $5,000 or $5,500 at Nome. They are, at Bethel and Nome, they're operating basically on boarding stipends, which is a little over $2,000.
Per year, per school year?
Per school year, per student.
What's the Anchorage per student? Or where?
Anchorage, I think, runs about $1,750 per student.
Have you done any evaluation in talking about students, whether the dormitory, whether the cottage or so forth, the cause of dropout, the problems? What can alleviate some of these problems, so what keep the children in school? Talking about human costs, dollars.
Well, when the state operates it, I will say this, the subcontractors have a lot more flexibility than when the state runs the facility. We, of course, are governed by state personnel rules. We have the minimum state wage per, and it's generally in the area of personal services that you get shortchanged when you have to operate 7 days a week, three shifts per day, and just not enough dollars to go around. The subcontractors have a lot more latitude because they do not have to pay at the same rates. And I think this is one basic difference. The dormitories is operated. No, I could not justify going in and asking for, let's say, $5,000 to operate a dormitory that I know that 35 or 40% of the students are going to drop out, plus also emotional problems and community-related problems, academic problems that are caused by dormitory living. I can't justify it.
But my point was, my question was, is there anything being done to see what the problems are within these to get rid of some of them? I'm talking just about the children themselves. I'm not talking about really a dollar sign. I'm thinking about the individual child that's in the school to keep them in school. Because we're talking about possibly future leaders of this state, of this whole United States, that possibly can come out of these school systems. And what are we doing, which to keep them in school? Is the school system adequate in which the children should be learning certain things and stuff like this? These are things that I'm talking about. I'm not really talking about how much it costs to construct a building, how many X dollars it costs for lights, how much it costs for, you know, people that are working. I'm talking just about the students themselves as what's really being done to see why they have so many dropouts within dormitories, or whether it's cottage or whether it's at home or different things like this. This is what I'm talking about.
There was that one piece of research done by the university.
Yes, there is a piece of, there is a research paper done by the university that I understand that should soon be published. And basically it says that it's comparing the urban boarding program, the rural boarding program, local 9th and 10th grade programs, and dormitory programs. And it comes to the conclusion in this that the dormitory is the, from a sociological, academic standpoint, very unsuccessful in terms of students achieving in school and also socially getting along in the community and so on. They say that the urban boarding program is successful for students who have high academic talent. And it leaves it at that. And it doesn't give any of the other identifying characteristics of a student that can profit. The students located at or educated very close to home or in a smaller setting have done better from a social standpoint, but not as well from an academic standpoint.
Mr. Thompson, Mr. Chairman, may I ask one question? Who wrote this up now? The University of Northern?
Yes. This is, it's not...
Right. It isn't published yet.
Oh. It's not published. It's the Institute of Social and Economic Government Research.
To the lady who...
Judy Kleinfeld.
Oh, right. Judy Kleinfeld. That, based on that, I think we have said, as an interim type of thing, rather than a large, complex dormitory, that a thing closer to a home setting, sociologically, is the cottage operation. And in the case of the cottage operations, we do have native parents, that is, foster parents. And I guess we'd say at this point, having only less than 6 months of any information to look at, that indications are that this was a fair, you know, assumption, and that things are looking pretty good. I guess sometimes you measure your program by how much static you get, how much dissatisfaction, and so forth, and we've seen less at this point. Really, we're in no position to make a statement and it with any sort of validity after only 6 months of cottage operation.
It seems to me, though, like we're always in one rut, one track on certain things. It comes up, dormitories, dollar signs, and different other things. And we're not even considering the students that are going to that school, what courses are going to be offered, really what effect would it have on them as an individual before they even put in that type of environment. And this is entirely something that's abstract. It's way over here someplace nobody's ever looked at it.
Yeah. I think Kleinfeld's study really does look at that. I think she has worked it out. I think the grid does speak to what would appear to be better academically for this group versus this group, what would be better sociologically, where they have more satisfaction, and that's about the best we can come up with, better sociologically. In which case, then, you trace this back and say, okay, what is the academic program here? Urban boarding home is an example. What's the academic offerings versus the closer to home rural operation, or a rural boarding home, or a cottage operation. I think eventually we are going to get at that, but we're not in a position right now.
The study would go and go deeper as to what the percentage of dropout is, what the percentage of suicide resulting in something like this, what's the percentage of alcoholism that can come out of something like this, or drugs, or other mental problems could be caused by this. I think it should be really considered.
Yeah, this one's well taken.
The children themselves, not thus constructing a dormitory.
Right, and I don't think she has geared it that much to the financial aspect of it. I really think her study will shed some light on the things you're talking about. We've only had some preliminary information from it, so you know, we really don't know what it says right now, but we think it's going to say these things. We've had this much preliminary information. And she didn't really look at it that much from a dollar standpoint. However, practically speaking, any time we deal with a program, and any time we're defending it either to the legislature or to the Johnson-O-Matic Committee or to anybody else, we simply cannot avoid getting into the dollar situation. And I'm sure you understand that.
The study basically deals with the different settings that boarding students are placed in, and it's a socio-academic study, and how well they have performed after, and if they've gone on to college, etc. And the fiscal part is more or less included as a footnote to it. As far as relating different costs, the entire study is generally is directed toward the students' social and academic growth.
Should be offered that isn't offered and so forth, the expertise that you need to think that.
We have nothing in the way of research relative to the correspondence. We have some thoughts, and they go something like this. If what we're seeing out of Kleinfeld's study is in fact, you know, a reality from the social point of view, it would tend to indicate that the closer home the students have an opportunity for a secondary education, the more socially, the better it is socially. All right. It would also, on the other hand, tend to indicate that on the basis of a variety of academic offerings, there may be some problems academically. So you can look at something like do the best job academically with instructors that you can do, with teachers that you can do, offer correspondence with, you know, individualized help and things like this. And a third alternative is try to work out some boarding arrangement which is much less time-wise, such as a quarter or something like this, in another area where some of these other offerings can be available to the student. Now, this is, you know, this is an idea. This isn't something that is. But it's something that we're giving some thought to as a possibility for recommendations to the legislature, to whomever shall make some decisions about education in the more rural areas of the state. And right now, we don't know, except by the fact that we have followed correspondence students longitudinally. And the results we have there is the longer student stays in correspondence, the better they do. And when they do go into the school district to an organized area, they seem to compete very well. But what we don't have here, and what I would caution against drawing conclusions about, is we have not said every student. You know, we haven't said all of these students and how many of them end up here. So we don't know what the dropout rate is. We don't know what the loss rate is, and we don't know what these kinds of things are. All we know is that if you take a mode of education for a longer period of time, you get better at it, and this is true of anything. So that's where we stand right now with the correspondence.
Well, speaking a little earlier, the reason why I get this correspondence, because we're really advanced in electronic stage age, and the equipment which they can have, the audio-visual equipment, and you can have an expert someplace that's far away, and the kid can sit there and look, and just like he is there, and can get these specialized things which the school does not offer. This is one aspect that
it is, and we are thinking about that. We have, you know, the kits, the Heath kit as an example, and that happens to be one old and quite usable kit that people take correspondence and utilize to build their equipment, electronics, and so forth. We found that that this works very well if there can be the communication and directions from a distance. And sometimes you can't depend only on instructions printed. You have to look to something else. We have some reasonable hope for the educational television mode of operation. A limited entry, admittedly, but at least we are in Bethel. We are in some of the other areas and the capabilities there. We would hope that this can tie together.
One of the other things looking ahead, too, is at some date when there is a satellite that can provide computer-assisted instruction. Or also, as you mentioned, the advanced laboratory courses and so on, where you're never going to generate enough students at a particular site that are going to be interested in that course, that we're looking at the sharing concept where schools, maybe three or four schools, share not only the equipment for a specialized course, because there is different companies are coming out with specialized systems equipment that will cover a course, and it's very packageable. You can ship it around, but also itinerant teachers. Maybe a teacher is a semester at this school teaching a course in physics and moves to the next school the next semester.
That just about covers it, then.
All right.
Do you have anything further?
No, I have nothing further. I do appreciate the opportunity to testify before your committee.
Well, thank you very much for appearing. I certainly appreciate that. Who is this gentleman that came in?
Well, this is Mr. Arrington, who formerly was the Regional Boarding Home Program, who is now the Executive Assistant to the Commissioner of Education for Minority Affairs.
Oh, did you wish to testify?
No, I just came in. I wish they would miss a call.
Oh, very good.
We were trying for another meeting, which unfortunately we missed earlier.
Yeah, so many of the meetings are overlapping, and then
that is downstairs.
Legislative Budget and Audit. We've got a couple of programs there.
That's where Mr. Ferguson is too. He's a member of the Legislative Budget and Audit, and then of course,
they are done. They went through a long lunch hour, and that happened to conclude before the plane got in and left Juneau at noon.
Well, I think at this point, we'll conclude our hearing. We'll just adjourn.